My name's Willis Choate, and I'm doing the workshop role of the husband. We're going to go about this in two ways. First of all, I'm going to take a look at marriage from God's point of view. And then I'm going to pull a very dirty trick on some of you guys. I'm going to tell you what your wife said about your marriage. Okay. I'm going to divide the God's point of view thing up in two ways. I'm going to do, first of all, what I've done before and what I had prepared, and then I'm going to wing it just a little bit and give you another overview. Why was man created? Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:27. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Genesis 1:28. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Man was created to have fellowship with God. Sin mars that fellowship, but not the relationship. The sin of man, when we sin, we mar our fellowship with God. But the relationship of Father-Son does not change. Why was woman created? Genesis 2:18. Then the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. Woman was created by God to provide man with a helpmate, a completer, for fellowship. In the marriage relationship, sin mars the fellowship and can sever the relationship. Okay? Their relationship from God, with God, from God and Christ's point of view. Their relationship from God and Christ's point of view. Genesis 2:24. For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Ephesians 5:23. I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail in just a minute. Ephesians 5:23. For the husband is the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he is the Savior. Ephesians 5:33. However, every one of you also must love your wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect the husband. The relationship model for the marriage is Jesus Christ's relationship with the church. Now, as you look at the scriptures, it becomes crystal clear that the wife was supposed to be a completer, not a competer. She is to complete him, not compete with him. I think generally the roles become reversed when a man does not fulfill his godly obligation to be the head of the house. Now, I come from a little old rural town, and I've seen a lot of small country churches. You find a country church that is run by women, and you'll find a church where the men were absent. They abdicated their role of leadership in the church. It is no different than in the family. The woman will only fill the void of leadership in your family if you vacate it. She was not designed to fill it. She was not intended to fill it. And that's not her role. As I said again, this also can happen in the family. What happened and what I illustrate in the church can also happen in the family. When that happens, when the wife becomes no longer a completer, but they are competing, the husband resents it, and she secretly resents him for putting her in a position with the kids and with him and with everything else where she had to fill the role. God has an umbrella of protection that was intended for the family. And under that umbrella, the pecking order, if you wish, of that order, of that umbrella, is God, man, woman. And I'll tell you guys, I hate this, but man's accountable to God for his wife and for his family. And there's absolutely no way around that. There's no, you can't sidestep that issue. I'm in the process of reading a book, and I'm going to share a little of it with you. And I'm going to share it with you because I believe that if your marriage is not everything that you think it ought to be, I recommend the book, and I'm not all the way through the book. Won't you write this down, and in case you ever need it, here's the name of the book. The book is Love Life for Every Married Couple. Love Life for Every Married Couple. It's by Ed Wheat, Dr. Ed Wheat. It was written in 1980, or copyrighted in 1980. And I tell you that because I'm getting ready to give you some statistics which, if they were shocking in 1980, think what they are today. In the 1970s, divorce became the natural outcome of marriage. Okay? People looked at it as the natural outcome of marriage. I had a couple tell me not long ago that they were getting married, and if it didn't work out, they would be divorced in 6 months. Oh, that's sick. Dr. Wheat says that in 1980, 75% of the family units needed counseling at some time or another. And by the way, guys, there is no reason to be ashamed of the fact that you need counseling in your marriage. Absolutely no reason. There's a point in everybody's marriage when you need help from the outside. Just seek godly counsel. Dr. Wheat said in the book that 40% of the marriages eventually ended in divorce. I wonder what the rate is today. It's in the round of up 50. And I'll tell you guys, one of the biggest problems that we have in marriage day is that you and I, and particularly the young guys that are getting married today, don't have a whole lot to model their marriage after. They don't have anything really substantive at home to model their marriage after. By the way, I probably need to introduce my wife in the sense to tell you what her name is because I refer to her. My wife's name is Noreen. And I'll tell you guys, if you're very smart, a smart guy marries over his head, okay? And I really did that. David, you don't have to jump up and shout hello.
You should have brought her, then everybody would think you were a lot smarter.
Thank you. You guys got any idea how you tell a judge to shut up?
Of course, adjourned.
Okay. Problems in marriage. I said, first of all, they didn't have anything to model. The other part problem with a marriage is that there is a lack of knowledge of biblical principles on which marriage is founded. Another problem is faulty human advice as opposed to the eternal counsel of God. Our goal should be to understand marriage as God ordained, in contrast to the opinion of the rest of the world. We have to be in a position where we can defend our marriage as God ordained when the rest of the world doesn't believe that's true. If you would look, and I don't ask you to because we don't have time, but if you looked at the first three chapters of Genesis, you find in the first three chapters of Genesis the foundation for everything else that is in the Bible. If you look at Genesis 1, the latter part of Genesis 1, you find the facts about man's creation. If you look at Genesis 2, the writer reveals the process by which it occurred. I want to take just a minute to read to you three things out of Dr. Wheat's book that I have found very, very interesting. And I'll comment on them just briefly. I'll give you a scripture. It's going to be a little redundant from the other scriptures, but I think it's worthwhile. The idea of male and female was God's idea. The idea of God and female was God's idea. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Creation would have been incomplete without the woman. Point two that he makes. Marriage was designed by God to meet the first problem of the human race, loneliness. I'm not going to read it, but the scripture for that is Genesis 2:18 through 22. In that scripture, it talks about the helpmate, if I remember correctly. The being a helper only occurs when there is a beneficial relationship between both parties. Okay, you with me? You don't help anybody. I'm not a helper to Howard unless in our relationship it is mutually beneficial. I'm just another person otherwise. And that's a part of it. Marriage always begins with a need. Now, you guys got married because you had a need. I'm not going to go into it exactly what it was, but part of it was loneliness. But inside of us ticks a clock, ticks something that causes us to have a need for a wife, for a woman, and we're not complete unless we have that. The need is for companionship and completion. I've used that word complete and completer about three or four times. It is the thing that prevents loneliness. Point three, marriage was planned and decreed to bring happiness, not misery. I just cry for these guys that are in horribly miserable relationships. Much of it because of their own cause. Point four. Marriage must begin by leaving all other relationships in order to establish a permanent relationship between a man and a woman. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother. Now, let me read the rest of that. And shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Guys, I hear a lot of talk from people occasionally from a guy who says that his wife never left her mother. You got to be careful with that because some of you guys have never left your fishing buddies. Okay? You know, some of you guys in your former life didn't leave your drinking buddies. But we better get off of that, hadn't we? Let's think a minute about cleave. Now, in the modern society, they might think that that's the root word of meat cleaver. Something that separates, it's just the opposite. Cleave means to hold on to affix to, it's the super glue. It's the glue that holds everything together. And we have to make an honest effort to hold our marriages and our relationships together. Incidentally, another thing that I think is interesting that I didn't recognize the first time, out of Genesis 2:24, there are 22 words. If you would look at them, they're all, almost all, are one-syllable words. Plain words and easy to understand. I just have to believe they're written for a guy. Okay? It just meant for us not to be able to mess it up. Okay? One-syllable words, 22 of them. Which says, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Now, whenever we throw that one flesh deal out, you guys all perk up. What goes through your mind? Don't answer this. What goes through your mind when you talk about thing about one flesh? Yep, you're right. Sex. It's far more than sex, okay? I better leave that alone or I'll get in trouble again. One other point out of the book that I'll make, it has to do with cleave. Anything that moves you further away from your life, from your wife, from your relationship with your wife, should be discarded. Anything that moves you further away from her should be discarded. I'm often reminded, as I read this and as I thought about this, I was reminded of the old saying that I was told a long time ago, probably in lay renewal, which predates all of you guys. But they said that there were no decisions in the life of a Christian. That there were no small decisions in the life of a Christian. Because each decision takes you closer to or further from God's perfect will for your life. Is that not true? The decision that you make in your marriage take you closer to or further from her. Okay? Now, I've kind of gone through the easy part of this deal. I've gone through the stuff that's on a little bit higher plane than the rest of it. Let me tell you how about 3 years ago, I got a call about doing the role of the husband workshop at a conference. And I told the guy that called me that I would not do it. And furthermore, I would never do it. Boy, isn't that smart. About 6 weeks later, I'm walking down the hall and I'm listening to my wife counseling with a young woman who's having marital problems. And I thought to myself, with all that I have heard and with all that I have seen and with all that I have been through, the next time somebody asked me to do the role of the husband, I'm going to step up and do it. Now, we took a sort of a unique approach to this. What we did was we created a form that we sent out to women whose husbands were attending the workshop I was about to speak to. It was sent out by my wife, and I never saw them. She put the information that came back into a computer and handed me the information. We asked them to answer this question. What would you like your husband told that would improve your marriage? Now, guys, the first time we did that, we sent out 22 letters. Got the number? 22. We got 36 responses. Honest engine. We got two back on ring-punched paper. We didn't send it out on ring-punched paper. They took it to the copier and filled it out. I have probably a database now of about 65. Maybe more questions. Why in the world did we get 36 replies on a 22-letter inquiry? I came to this conclusion. Women appreciate being asked their opinion. And we are not good at that, guys. Secondly, the problems in marriages aren't superficial. They are deep-seated and often have existed for years without resolution. In the midst of doing this, Noreen, by the way, let me give you a little history on Noreen and I. Me. She and I have been hanging around together since I was 15 and she was 14 and I'm 66. Okay? I'm going to tell you something about her. I love her more today than I did the first time I had a lustful look at her. Okay? I love my wife more today than the first time that I ever saw her. But I'm going to tell you something else. We work at our relationship. Now, she was about ready to kick me out about probably 30 years ago. And through the counsel of a very godly woman, I survived. Enough of that. Noreen made a statement as we were compiling this stuff and preparing this. And I think it ought to shake you guys to your shorts, okay? A woman knows at least a year ahead of time that her marriage is in trouble, and a man doesn't recognize it until it hits him. Often by then it is too late to repair without deep, long-lasting scars. I'm presently involved in a situation where we're trying to help a couple, and he got hit by the train and he didn't even hear the whistle. She knew a year or two or three, she says 7 years, that their marriage was in trouble, and she tried to talk to him about it, and he refused to listen. He just didn't hear it. Now, women don't come out and say, good night, our marriage is in trouble. They send you subtle signals, which we're supposed to be able to pick up. Again, let me read you the statement. A woman knows at least a year ahead of time that her marriage is in trouble, and a man doesn't recognize it until it hits him. Often by then, it is too late to repair without deep, long-lasting scars. That's the reason that we should listen closely to our wives when they say something. Incidentally, the age range on the questionnaires was 23 of the respondents, as best we can tell, was 23 to 75. We had a 23-year-old gal that sent in one. We had a 75-year-old woman that sent in one. Now, the way I'm going to attempt to do the rest of this workshop is I'm going to read their statements, we're going to apply Scripture to it, and I'm going to make a comment. Now, I started this off, the first one I started off with, I wanted to get your attention. I'm going to tell you how I got this one. I was in a business talking to a friend who attends conferences occasionally with us, and I told him what we were doing, and he and I were talking about it, and he and I both talked too loud, I guess. And a girl behind the counter who worked for him heard it. And she walked up to me, and I've known her ever since she's a kid, and she's had three divorces. She walked up to me and she said, you could have told my last two husbands they needed to keep their fly zipped when they weren't at home. Bang. Infidelity had ruined her, two of her marriages. Let's put some Scripture with it. 1 Corinthians 10:13. There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also provides a means of escape. Stephen Covey says that between stimulus and response, man has the freedom to choose. Now, I am not so naive to think that all of us, every man in this room at some time or another has been twinked a little bit. And I'm not going any further with that statement, but twinked. The problem is not being twinked. The problem is what you do after that happens. Between stimuli, some gal looks good to you. And if I'm not going to that, but if some gal looks good to you and you don't have some kind of an emotional response, you're really unusual. And I'm happy for you. Proverbs 5, 3 through 5 out of the Message. Boy, listen to this one. The lips of a seductive woman are oh so sweet. Her soft words are oh so smooth. But it won't be long before she's gravel in your mouth, a pain in your gut, a wound in your heart. She's dancing down primrose path to death. She's headed straight for hell and taking you with her. Now, guys, is that clear? Eugene Peterson wrote, God is kind, but he's not soft. Now, there are a multitude of reasons that are really just excuses for infidelity but none of them are beyond the husband's control. I don't care who it is that gets after you, or you get after. There's sometime in there you can flip the switch and turn that deal off. I'm going to give you a little illustration, and I'm going to tell you one of my friends that I love and spent a lot of invested in me used to say. Now, we're in the cattle business, as are some of you guys. There's one thing about an old cow that you learn pretty quick. It's very difficult to put a one-eyed cow through a gate she can't see. John's up here laughing. There's nothing worse than trying to drive a one-eyed cow or a one-eyed calf or a one-eyed bull. Get it down on your guys' level. Now, guys, you ain't going nowhere you're not looking. In infidelity, you're not going anywhere you're not looking. Okay? Gene Warr, who was a mentor to me, told me that after when he was single, that when he met a good-looking woman on the street, he would quote a verse. Not a bad idea, is it? Meets a good-looking woman that's in the form of temptation on the street, and he quoted a verse. Now, he said, Willis, the better she looked, the longer the verse. And then he said, I've seen a lot of Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 out of the Amplified women. Lean on trust and be confident in the Lord with all your heart and mind. Do not rely on your own insight and understanding. In all your ways, know, recognize, and acknowledge Him, and He will direct and make straight and plain your paths. And she's by. Not bad advice. Not bad advice. Well, let's move on. I seem to have not done very well with that one. We'll try another one. Now, I'm getting ready to get all over some of you guys, and I'm sorry, but it's coming. The woman's response was, tell my husband how I feel when I suspect or know he is accessing pornography on the Internet. It makes me feel undesirable, that I am not meeting his sexual needs. I don't know how to compete with it, and I don't understand what might be his obsession with it. It is like he is committing adultery. I wonder what you are thinking when you are watching it and what you are doing privately after watching pornography. I worry about where it is leading you and what comes next. If it weren't bad, why would you hide it from me? A good start would be being honest with me about it. I need to know what your fantasies and desires are. You should not be afraid to talk to me about what you want that you are not getting. You might also ask me at the right time with the right attitude about what I want that I'm not getting. Communication, even about sex, must be a two-way communication, a two-way conversation. I have needs too! Exclamation mark. Matthew 6:22-23. The eye of the lamp, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is sound, your entire body will be full of light. If your eye is unsound, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the very light in you is darkened, how dense is that darkness? Matthew 6:22-23. How many of you guys have internet? Raise your hand. Now, this is not going to be an embarrassing deal. How many of you? Let's hold them up. Come on. Timothy, get your hand up there. Okay, put them down. Now, the question I'm not going to ask you is, how many of you have seen porn on the internet? I'm going to give you another quickie. Now, this is not professional. This is just from observation. I want you to think with me the first time in your life you saw a pornographic image. I'm not asking you, but I would imagine that over 50% of you can remember the first pornographic image that you ever saw. It's been that way nearly everywhere I've ever seen the survey run where guys were honest. I'm not going to ask you guys because you wouldn't be honest with me. No, that's not true. There is something about our heads that guys are stimulated visually. A woman is not as stimulated visually as a man is. There's something about the way that God created us and that we're wired, we're stimulated visually. You know. A bad thing about pornography is we invite it into our houses. Not only that, we pay to have it brought in. I would say one other thing. Don't get down on yourself too badly if you stumbled on the pornography on the internet or somewhere else and you looked at it long. The problem comes when you're obsessed with it. I'm not advocating you do it ever. Stay away from it. But don't kick yourself if you did do it, okay? Just ask forgiveness and get up and walk like a child of the king. I think there is a natural curiosity among guys for porn. When it becomes an obsession, it becomes a real problem. The real draw of porn with a guy may very well be that the woman gives herself unconditionally to the man. Okay? The woman gives herself unconditionally to the man. And then we make this comparison between accommodation, sexual accommodation in a marriage, as opposed to unconditional surrender. Let's lighten this up a little bit. In about 1970-something, I walked into a clothing store in Ardmore, Oklahoma, and back on a round table, they had a number of issues of Playboy magazine. Now, guys, Playboy magazine in the 70s ain't nothing compared to what you find today, okay? But it was there. I'm not sure whether I was as interested in buying clothes as I was going back and sitting at the table, but that we won't get into that one. But while I was back there, and I did not have the Playboy magazine in my hand, and I wasn't looking at one, an old guy. Now, he's got to be 66, okay? I don't know what old guy was to me in the 70s, but it had to be 66. He walked up. I didn't know the guy. He walked up to me, and he said, "Son," said, "for me to be looking at Playboy magazine is just like me looking at National Geographic." He said, "It's showing me all kinds of pictures of places I ain't going." Okay. Let's talk about it just a little bit further. Pornography kills the soul, steals the heart, destroys the mind. Pornography is not a victimless crime. 20 years ago, the advice that I heard given by Gene Warr and some other guys several times was that if you had a problem with the girly magazines which is what porn was back then, 20, 25, 30 years ago, porn back then basically was girly magazines, and the advice was to stay out of convenience stores. I'm going to tell you why. Because to buy a risque or dirty magazine, I like that term dirty, but dirty magazine, a guy had to pick it up off of the shelf, walk up to the counter, lay it on the counter, put his money down, and look a person in the eye. And at that point, the guy identified with what he was buying. And that was a tremendous hindrance. Now think about it. This is This isn't rocket science, but just think about it. Today, you don't have to do any of that to get into your house. If you've got cable television, you more than likely, by the way, you're getting it, you can watch the halftime of the Super Bowl and get it, okay? But I'm talking about the real hardcore stuff. You invite it into your house. Guys, pornography is an epidemic today. You have any, I don't have the number, and I heard it the other night, and I wouldn't even quote the number I heard. You have any idea how big an industry it is? We're talking about billions of dollars. And interlaced in the background of it is the underworld. I don't know how many, I can't count right now, how many marriages that Noreen and I have seen that were either destroyed or seriously marred by the guy's interest, obsession with pornography. I'll say you one more time. It is not a victimless crime. And if you invite it into your house, you're asking for serious problems. Just off the cuff, I'll tell you two stories. I have a friend that was in it, was probably in porn for 30 years. He's been out 8 years. He talks about it at men's conferences. I'm not violating a confidence. He deals with guys who have a serious obsession with it. It ruined his marriage. It marred his relationship with God. It caused him problems on the job. It caused him problems in every area of his life. Now, this guy is not any idiot, okay? He's a professional guy. I'm not going to tell you what he does, but he's a professional guy. Probably has a couple of degrees. He's been out of it 8 years. I don't have any idea who the guy is, and he could be in this room, so I don't know who the guy is. They've been working with a guy for 2 years. He'll get out. They call him every morning to check on him. He can stay out of it 6 weeks, 7 weeks, back in it. 6 weeks, 2 weeks, 1 week, and he's back in it. Now, guys, if you have any leanings that direction, get out of it and stay out of it. It's like the plague. It will destroy your life. It will destroy your marriage. And worse than that, it destroys the way you feel about yourself. Another one of their guys that he's dealing with will go call it up on the computer at the office and get up and go to the bathroom at his office and masturbate. Now, guys, that deal's serious. It's insidious, and it is just exactly like cancer. Let's move on. Of all of the surveys that we looked at, one of the things that came up probably most often was, communicate with me. Do you really value my opinion? If you do value my opinion, why don't you ask me for it more? When I want to talk about something I think is serious, why don't you really listen to me? Now, you guys, we all know how to listen but not listen, okay? Why don't you really listen to what I have to say instead of pretending to? Turn off the TV and give me your undivided attention. Turning off the TV and giving me your undivided attention would be a good start. be supportive instead of finding loopholes in my ideas. Hear me out. Now, there's a mad woman, guys. 1 Corinthians 13:5. Love is not rude. Helen Rowland wrote, "When a girl marries, she exchanges the attention of all the men of her acquaintance for the inattention of one." Want that one again? Yeah. When a girl marries, she exchanges the attention of all the other men of her acquaintance for the inattention of one. Researchers have found that a couple most actively communicates, that most married couple, let me get it right, that most married couples actively communicate an average of 27 minutes a week. They communicated the most on their third date and the last year before they got divorced. That's research. We have been dealing with a couple that had not ever really done any communication, and I don't know that they're ever going to be able to pull it out. It's just too far gone. Nobody listened. Communication is a learned skill. Communication is more than just talking. It's more than just listening. Christian marriages call for the Christian, for the Christians in reality to share and to enjoy fellowship in a very unique and intimate way. We have an obligation to continue to move toward our wife. There was a survey I intended to put in that listed among, that asked, gave about 12 scenarios on what your position of your marriage was, and the one that was most interesting to me out of them was the statement that we both are moving, are making a concerted effort to move toward one another. I paraphrased it, but that both the man and the woman were trying to move together. It is thought that as long as we don't attack our wife and say cruel things to her, I'm a good husband. But the opposite of biblical love is not hate. It's apathy. To stop moving towards your spouse is to stop loving her. In our acquaintance, we know a gal who was making $100,000 a year, was married to a guy that was a louse. She required of him, now he had a Harley and he traveled and he did all this other stuff, she required of him a Sunday lunch and an afternoon, Sunday afternoon together. And he couldn't muster that. And although I don't advocate divorce, I think he got what he had coming. And she didn't do it with two bricks either. Listen to me is the next one. But don't feel like you need to solve all my problems for me. Don't always act like you know what I am thinking. Just ask me. I wish for once when it was obvious that I need to talk that you would turn off the television set, look straight at me, and listen, really listen. Please let me finish my thought without interruption. I long for the day that one of our serious conversations ends with a reassuring hug and a positive affirmation that you heard what I said and you appreciate me and what I think. Proverbs 18:13. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly, shame on him. Now guys, think of the number of times that your wife has wanted to talk to you and you cut her off at the knee. The problem is that when a wife is talking and we're half listening, because we're loading our machine gun to shoot down her idea. Right? Think about it. You get about halfway into that deal, and all of a sudden you're is on fire, you know. And what you do is you start loading intellectually what you're going to shoot at her and mow her down. The reason you guys laughed is because you know it's the truth. Look back at what the woman said in the amplification of this complaint. Turn off the television. Look straight at me. Give me your undivided attention. How often have you ended a discussion with your wife with a hug? Now, guys, I'm not real smart. But after I read this, Noreen and I had a little bit of a tiff about 2 weeks later. And I'm sitting there thinking, practice what you preach. And I took a foot, she's sitting on the couch, and I took a footstool, and I turned off whatever it was I was watching on television. It had to have been sports or a cooking show. I went over and I put the footstool right in front of the couch where she was sitting. And I looked her right straight in the eye, and I listened to her. And you know, the darndest thing happened when I listened to her. She was right. I mean, miraculous. I heard it all the way through. I responded to her in a very calm, genteel way with a loving spirit. And when we got through, I said, "Hun, stand up." And I grabbed her and I hugged her and I kissed her right on the lips. And the rewards for that are really not bad. Oh, me. You guys bring out the worst in some people. How do you define success? She says, as a provider, a husband, and a father. You seem to think success is measured by how well you are providing for us financially. This is a common benchmark in our society, but I would like you to look on the uncommon side and define for me what you believe is success as a husband and a father. Investing your time in your family is as important as how you invest your money. I can see her saying it, can't you? I bet that pencil was humming. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and he is worse than an infidel. 1 Timothy 5:8. I'm sorry. Guys, relationships and providing for your wife are far more than money. She has an emotional void and a psychological void that you must fill to have a successful relationship. A woman told my wife this week, no, it was last week, that she had been trying to talk to her husband about some critical issues in their marriage for a number of years. And every time it got really serious, he went out and brought her a present, sometimes expensive. And she said, "I don't want the presents. They have no value. I want him. I want his attention. I want his love. And I want him to put his arms around me and make me feel secure." Now, guys, that's where it is. It's not money. Husband and provider, you're responsible to protect your wife and provide for her physical and emotional and spiritual needs. The other common thread that I found, and now we were sampling Christian women, but I found in these surveys that there are a large number of women who want you guys to be the spiritual leader of your house. Most of us don't want to be and aren't. Many households, the woman is the spiritual leader because we have abdicated, if that's the right word, our responsibility. He is accountable to God for how he leads his family, by sacrificially loving his wife and children and providing for their physical, spiritual, and emotional needs. A father should spend quality time with his children. I have a son whose name is John. He's the youngest of two sons. The older son is Willis. John and his wife got divorced when their kids were pretty young, and John lives in Marietta. And our grandchildren live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And their mother has remarried, and it's a difficult situation. It's difficult for John because he misses his kids, okay? It's difficult for the kids because they miss their dad. And by God, it's difficult on grandma and grandpa. This last summer, John and Catherine and Connor are our two grandkids' names. They're born in 92 and 90. They've gone to the Navigator Camp Eagle Lake for 4 years. Tremendous camp. It's been our practice to grandma and grandpa take them out there and put them up, take them to, and we ride, stay at the Glen the night before, and they go into camp on Sunday morning, and we drop them off, and then we pick them up on Friday, and we all spend time together and go home. This last year, we were fortunate enough to sell a couple old cows, and we're able to send Catherine and Connor for 2 weeks. The first week, Connor went out on a trek backpacking deal. They were supposed to have 8 little guys, and they ended up with 2 kids, 2 guys, and 2 counselors. You talk about a quality time, one-on-one with a counselor, backpacking in the Colorado mountains. Tremendous for Connor. Catherine, during that time, was in the camp, in what they call residence camp or res camp. John, our son, flew up on Saturday, and we picked him up. And he and Catherine went out on a dad-teen trek. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the next week. Connor stayed in camp. During that time, Catherine and John, father, daughter, prayed together, studied the Bible together, dug latrine ditches, pitched tents, rappelled, and boy, all of that was great. But I want to tell you what was even greater. John gave Catherine the blessing. Catherine had his undivided attention for 5 days. And as they prayed together, John affirmed to Catherine what she meant in his life. Guys, when she came home, she didn't talk about rappelling down the side of the rocks. She didn't talk about having to carry that 40-pound pack like everybody else. She told her grandmother and her granddad that she had gotten the blessing from her dad. Now, guys, if you haven't spent some quality time with your kids and your grandkids, it's time. Give them the blessing of knowing what they mean to you, because they need it and you need it. That's a freebie. I would like to feel emotionally intimate with my husband. What time am I supposed to stop? 5:30? Is that right? Tell me at 5:20. I would like to feel emotionally intimate with my husband. We seem incapable of discussing our feelings, dreams, etc. Why won't he be emotionally honest with me? When instituting marriage, God declared, "And they shall no longer be two, but one." To be one obviously means to have secrets from each other. As soon as the couple begins to hide matters from one another, they compromise the basic oneness of their marital relationship. To fail to understand one's spouse is to fail to understand oneself. I read this week that when there is a divorce, when a marriage splits and there is a divorce, out of that divorce does not come two individuals. Out of that divorce becomes a fraction of one. Now think about that. I think that may explain why it is difficult in second marriages. Because the guy and the gal carry into that relationship a piece of the personality with whom they have previously been joined. I don't have anything scientific on that. That's observation. And if you've ever watched a couple of guys that have had a rough go at it the first time, try to get a marriage together, it's interesting to observe. I am so thankful that all I've ever had is one wife. I think it's also tremendously interesting why, I read a book one time that said he couldn't understand why chief executives in companies who could run multi-million dollar companies had never figured out that it was more costly to support two women, a wife and a mistress, than it was one woman. The other thing that was said was they couldn't understand why a smart man would deprive his wife of the attention that she had coming only to get a divorce and go out and try to shower a lesser quality woman with all of his attention and money. That there was just something about that in the business world that didn't make any sense. Now that's a practical thing. Marriage is a partnership, not a corporation. He acts like he's the boss and I'm the gopher. Why don't you regularly ask me how you can help with the housework, dinner, laundry, children, especially homework? Give me the same consideration you'd give your clients, customers, or friends. Please don't make me wait weeks and months to get something done around the house. Man, I can't understand that. Can you? You've never done that, have you? Oh, you angelic looking toads. Housework isn't just a woman. She continues. I'm not going to go into what. Housework isn't the toad deal wasn't in there. Housework isn't just a woman's job. I sooner or later decide that I am not really important to you. I get to the point I believe you are only using me. Your attitude takes the romance out of our relationship. The vast majority of people do not enter marriage with a view of becoming a servant. How many of you guys got married hoping you'd get to become a servant? Yeah. Didn't work, did it? No, okay. I'm not going to go into it, but if you want a real example of servanthood, I think it's the primary example in the Word. It's John 13 through 1 through 17, and has to do with the washing of the feet. The important thing to remember is that service is a spiritual discipline. We owe it to God, and it can only be lived out as we apply it to others, including our wives. The important thing to remember is that service is a spiritual discipline. We owe it to God, and it can only be lived out as we apply it to others, including our wives. I've got a little old deal that I do, and it is so puny that you guys are not think it's very important, but to my wife it's a big deal. I wear button-down shirts, and she told me one time, she said, you know, it would really help me if you would unbutton those collar buttons before you put them in the dirty clothes. Now, I'm not a pilot in the, you know, get beat about the head a little bit, get you out of that pot and clothes and floor deal. So I put them in the laundry chute. She asked me if I would unbutton my collar buttons before I put them in the dirty clothes. Now, is that a big deal? Guys, it's a big deal to her. And when it gets to be a big deal to her, it gets to be a big deal with me. And I do that. And I don't know how many times that I have been thanked for that. Isn't that interesting? It's the little stuff. There's a scripture in the Song of Solomon that says it is the little foxes that ruin the vineyard. It's the little things in a marriage that ruin. It's the little things that ruin a marriage. It's really not normally the big blowout deals. It's normally the little things. What I learned from talking to a guy that knows a lot about the Song of Solomon is that what happened was that the bud on a vine contained, the setting was in the desert, okay, in an arid climate. The bud, when it first comes on the vine, has more moisture than the stem would have. And the little foxes would come in and eat the buds off of the vines. That makes sense, doesn't it? It's the little things in a marriage that eat up your marriage. It's the little foxes that eat up your marriage. Don't minimize your wife's job. Recognize that my job is important. Realize that I work 40 hours plus two each week outside the home. I get tired. I need some help. I need some time to relax. Give me a night off once in a while. 1 Timothy 5:18, the laborer is worthy of his or her wages. Philippians 2:4, let each one of you look only on your own interest, but also at the interest of others. Give your wife a fresh supply of love and appreciation every day. It's the little things. About 5 weeks ago, my wife and I had been having a little bit of stress at the office. And our phone had been ringing a little bit too much ministry-wise. And I said, "Hun, why don't we go out to Pike?" Now, we've got 160 acres out at Pike. And our Pike place is 2 miles from the nearest house. I said, "Why don't we go to Pike?" We went out there and walked around a little bit, and then it was getting dark. We dropped the tailgate down on the back of the pickup, and she and I sat there and listened to the coyotes howl and the armadillo run underneath the pickup. Hey, that'll get you hugged, by the way. You know what? That's about as good a time as I've had lately. I spent a whole lot more money trying to have a good time. But sitting on that pickup with my wife, we had a hawk that was circling, and he was all upset because we were in his territory. The coyotes knew we were there, and they were bothersome. And off in the distance, I could hear an old hog rooting around, one of those feral pigs. And you know what else? Going in, we saw 9 wild turkeys. Saw the 6 wild hogs. But that wasn't a big deal. The big deal was I sat on the tailgate of my pickup holding my wife's hand as the sun went down. Now, I advocate dates for mates. But I don't think they have to be money dates. I take my wife and I walk the malls occasionally. And guys, you know, that may not be the top of my list. But I don't feel a whole lot bigger, a whole lot more important than I walk down the mall with my wife hand in hand. I shouldn't do it, get off in this, but I'm going to. I guess, walking on the wild side. Please give me some verbal encouragement and compliments. A lot would be even better. Tell her she's beautiful to you. Others compliment her, even other men. She only wants the approval of her husband. Flirt with her a little bit. Pamper her with romance. You'll get a great reward. Proverbs 25:11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold setting in silver, in settings of silver. A good marriage is not something you find, it's something you work for. Another thing I learned a long time ago is that good sex starts in the morning. A kiss on the neck and a real attentive hug when you leave sure does set things going for the evening, okay? Now, I was given this workshop over in East Texas, and old boy raised his hand, a burly-looking character. And he said something I'd heard before, but I never heard it with as much force. He said, "Men are like a microwave. Quick on. And a woman is like a crock pot. A slow cooker." That's true. Guys, you have a tendency to come at it a whole lot quicker than she does. And if you're real smart, you work at that. A selfish lover is not a very smart lover. I'm picking and choosing now. One of the other things, I don't have it in here, but one of the other things I thought was funny out of this deal is that, I'll preface this with a question. How many of you have ever pinched your wife on the backside? Okay? She doesn't consider that foreplay. Groping and grabbing are not her idea of foreplay. I once had to take a guy that we were doing Bible study with the country with me. The guy honestly thought, he had been raised a little bit rough. He honestly thought that when he told his wife to roll over, that was foreplay. And I told him that there was probably better ways to go about that that would be far more satisfying for all parties than that. And I lived through that illustration with him. Let's see where we are. we've done the spiritual leader, make your wife priority. In that series of things, there's also another word that I had not heard very much. A number of times, the woman would say she wanted to be wooed. Isn't that an interesting word? What do you think that means? Sought after? Schmused? You like schmused better, you know? I thought that was interesting. I don't even know what, I'm from the country. I don't know a whole lot about words like woo. It is one syllable. But about as far as I'll go with that. I thought that was interesting. I'm going to read you one that applies to me, and it applied to me for a long time, and it was the most insidious, stupid thing that I've ever done. Don't use sarcasm or curse words during times of disagreement, or any time for that matter. Be aware of your attitude, your tone of voice. Never ridicule her. Always show her love and respect in front of the children, whether they're small or grown. If you show disrespect for her in the front of the kids, they will learn not to respect her. Never discuss your differences in front of an audience. They should always be discussed in privacy. Don't make her look bad before other people. And I had a terrible fault of being sarcastic with my wife in public, which was demeaning to me, not her. That was demeaning to me. And I had to back off and look at it and confess it to sin and ask God to forgive me of it. Putting her down in front of people is not building you up. Have contempt for contempt. Ephesians 4:29. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it might impart grace to the hearer. Here's one I had not used previously, been in my notes for a long time, hadn't used it previously. Make it a goal to understand each other as deeply as you can. Now listen to this. One wife put it this way. My husband is a mystery island. I am forever circling around it, but never finding a beach where I may land. Oh, isn't that gripping? My husband is a mystery island. I am forever circling around it, but never finding a beach where I may land. Men seem to think that if they remain aloof, they can escape accountability. Protect me. I need to feel safe physically and emotionally. I will feel safe if I know you are providing for me. Pray with me and for me. Pray with me and for me and give leadership in our marriage. If I know he is trusting God, I know I can trust him. Isn't that, now that's a neat statement, isn't it? I know that if he is trusting God, I can trust him. I want my husband to be the spiritual leader of our family. Proverbs 27:33. Be diligent to know the state of your flock and attend to your herd. Convince me that you really believe our possessions and money are the Lord's and are seeking his direction in how to use it. Teach me by example how to honor God with all that we have as a family. Actions speak louder than words. Matthew 7:16. You know them by their fruit. Getting pretty close, aren't we? One other side thing. Guys, if you don't give your wife some responsibility and some training in the managing of your house, the managing of your money, something suddenly happens to you, she's lost. And somebody will take advantage of her. There's a woman that in our acquaintance whose husband had a stroke and died, and she did not even know how to balance a checkbook or had never written that many checks. She had no idea what they owned. She had no idea what was going on in the family. He kept it from her. Guys, when my financial condition was just really stinky, I never would share it with my wife. The reason was I felt like it was I probably thought it was attacked on my manhood, something I don't know how to. So y'all say it better than I can, but you know what I'm saying? Now, every once in a while in everybody's life, your finances go crappy, okay? It's hard to look her in the face and say, Lynn, you know, we're going down the tube. Now, I don't know why I'm going to tell you this, but I at one time was in the process of losing 60% of my income. And I could see it coming to me just like you can see a train. I couldn't stop it. And I went down, and I was emceeing a home meeting. It was when I first began to be around some of the guys spiritually. I went down to emcee a home meeting at Denton, Texas. And Gene Warr, they actually invited people into home to hear Gene Warr speak. And I was going to introduce him. In fact, it's the first time I'd ever done it. And he looked at me and he said, Willis, you're not in good shape, are you? And I said, no, Gene, I'm not. I'm falling apart. Okay? And he said, this meeting will wait. Let's go back to the bedroom. We went back in the bedroom and shut the door, and I cried like a baby. It was coming apart. He gave me the best advice that I've ever heard, and I've given it to a lot of guys. You may need it sometime. You want to think about it. He said, make a plan for the worst. Figure out what you're going to do if it all comes apart. He says, more than likely, that will not happen. But if it does, you know you can handle it. And if you can handle the worst, you can handle anything else. Pretty good advice. Now, I was waking up at night 6, 7, 8 times during the night in a cold sweat. You guys may be able to relate to this. And he told me, he said, Willis, go home and memorize out of the Amplified Bible, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And every time that rolls over your life, that instability, that's a better word for it. I can't think what the word is. It's sort of like malaise. He said, quote that verse. And I would quote that verse and go back to sleep. I've quoted that verse as high as 6 times in the night. I quoted it a while ago for you. Lean on trust and be confident in the Lord with all your heart and mind. Do not rely on your own insight and understanding. In all your ways, know, recognize, and acknowledge Him, and He will direct and make straight and plain your paths. That's how I survived. But the bad thing about it was Noreen knew I was going through the ringer, but she didn't know how bad. And if I'd been smart enough to share it with her, she and I would have gone through it and walked through it hand in hand. But I stiff-armed her every time. Every time she came at me, and every time I got close, and she asked me a question, I'd stiff-arm. I would lie to her. Flat out lie to her. Because I didn't want to admit that I was that poor a manager or that stupid. She hardly knew it. Guys, it's not about money. It's about time with your wife. It's not about money. Poof, money goes. Relationships don't. I'm going to tell you one other thing, and I'm going to tell you this because last time I got into this, and I shouldn't have, and I just feel compelled to do it again. Because a guy came up to me and told me later how much it meant for a 66-year-old guy to look him right straight in the face and tell him that his sex life was better, that my sex life was better than it ever had been. See, a lot of these guys don't think that there's sex after 40. I'm going to tell you two quick stories. A friend of mine's dad was 92 years old, I believe, and he was married an 88-year-old woman. His wife had died. Her husband had died. And my friend asked his dad, said, "Well, Dad, what do you want us to tell our friends?" And he said, "David, tell them we had to." About 6 months ago, and I guess he's 96 or 97 now, he told David, he said, "Son," said, "I found a real benefit out of that Methodist Church Bible, men's Bible study I've been attending." And David said, "What is it, Dad?" He said, "I found out about that little blue pill." So at 96, if you're still wanting that little blue pill, there's hope for all of you guys, okay? I did not tell the joke they told me not to tell, and I'm so thankful. What, y'all have any questions real quick? Yeah, I'll do that real quick. Let's do that green sheet deal. Yeah. This is real quick, and I can do it in just a couple of minutes. No, I'm not going to do that to you guys. Okay, real quick. The upper left-hand corner is a triangle. Husband, wife, God. I want you on the left-hand axis to put a mark of where you are spiritually in relationship to your wife on the right-hand axis of the triangle. Now, be honest, nobody's going to see it, and don't take this thing home. But on the left-hand side, put a mark where you think you are spiritually in relationship to your wife. And put a mark where you think she is. Now, guys, I'm going to tell you, in this crowd, I would suspect that most of you are further up the triangle spiritually than your wife. But at home, because of the women's ministry in my community, those women outpace the guys 2-1. That's a problem. Because if we don't grow towards Christ at basically the same rate, it causes friction. It shouldn't, but it does. I had a guy tell me one time that his wife was so heavenly minded that she was no earthly good. Now that's a horrible thing to say. But what he meant was that she was so spiritually past him that he could not relate to her. Work at growing closer to your wife's spiritual maturity. Or bring her up to yours. A key to marriage. A marriage where they're on the same spiritual plane is far smoother than one where they're not. The right hand, and this is one I got into this last 2 weeks ago with a guy. Husband on the left, wife on the right. shared common goal. It's interesting to me that a marriage that where two people are making a sacrificial effort towards a common goal, the marriage goes smoother. There's something about that striving together, working together. Now, in my case, the case of the guy we talked to the other day, they saved 7 years for a new house. They've got all of the toys, guys. They got the new house and they've got the toys. And all of a sudden they have nothing. I think within 30 days they'll be divorced. Because they no longer have a common shared goal to which they are sacrificially working. Think about that. Some of this is a little bit deep. I mean, think about that. What is your common shared goal with your wife? In my case, I am trying to help undergird and support and be supportive to my wife in her ministry. My wife has a real strong ministry. In the past, maybe I had it. Now she has it. And I'm trying to come along beside her and undergird her. Hey, guys, I've got some guys that when the women's ministry is working, we go wait tables. We serve the food. We park the cars. But that's a common goal. Okay, the bottom part of it, I don't want to get into this very much, but right mental attitude. It begins with open communication, implication and inferences notwithstanding, and a servant's attitude or servant's actions. If I were going to ask you to do one thing when you come out of this workshop, when you get home, in the next 24 hours after you get home, you find some way that you can serve your wife. Something you're not accustomed to doing, find some way to serve your wife. I got a letter after doing this thing down in East Texas from a woman. And it was kind of interesting. She said, the next time you give that thing, that workshop, you tell the husbands that at home is a woman who would like to hear what went on at the conference, would like to be a part of that experience by him sharing it, and would like to have a hug and a kiss when he gets home. I got a guy here that went home and practiced what I preached last year. You can't slap the smile off his face. Right? If you guys came in here and this was just an intellectual exercise, or if this was just something that you did to go spend an hour and 15 minutes, it's been wasted. If you don't make application of what you've learned in here, it's wasted. I'm going to give you about 2 or 3 minutes, and I know I'm running over time. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes. You write down one thing on that sheet that you will do, one application that you will make out of this time we spent together. I apologize for running over. Then when I get through, I'll close us with a prayer. One thing that you will do, one application you'll make out of this workshop.